Hello, and welcome to our daily check-in here at KBIA, where we are checking in with each other every weekday for community connection and conversation over the airwaves. Thank you for being here. At these check-ins, we're talking with guests every day who speak on a wide variety of topics related to the coronavirus crisis. We've had MDs, business experts, public officials, and many of you are joining us every day to talk with us about the impact of the crisis. Today, we are talking about what we know about the disease itself, and there's so much that is not known about this novel strain of coronavirus that's affecting our lives so profoundly, whatever our circumstances right now. Dr. Christelle Albudo is with us today. She's an MU infectious disease specialist. We'll explore with her how the virus is transmitted, what's changed since we first learned about COVID-19 at the end of 2019, and how each of us can do our part to flatten the curve here in mid-Missouri. She's going to talk to us about everything to do with this. And she's a professor of clinical child health. She's also the director of MU Healthcare's Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases. She's the medical director of infection control and prevention for MU Healthcare. All of that to say, she knows a lot about this and has been working on the front lines of our community and healthcare response as this crisis unfolds. Dr. Albudo, welcome to KBIA.
Thank you for having me.
You also, listeners, can join our discussion. What questions do you have about this strain of novel coronavirus, how it spreads, or what you can do to protect yourself and your family? Are you wearing a mask in public? Have you found messages on masks and other messages at all confusing? Dr. Albudo is here with us by remote, but with us nevertheless, and can answer your questions. So give us a call with your questions or your comments about how you're staying safe and what you would like to know about this disease. Thank you, Dr. Albudo, for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
And as an infectious disease specialist, let me just start with a general question. How do things look from where you are right now?
I think it is a pretty fast-moving target. There is new data that comes out every day about this new virus and what it is, how it's transmitted, how it affects different people. And so it's an ever-changing landscape in terms of learning and adapting our care to what we know.
So you're right, fast-moving target. Anybody who's been paying attention, but especially someone like you, trying to sort out what is known and get those messages out to the public and get the response happening with our hospitals, how are you dealing with that challenge?
I think it's a great challenge that we came together very well as a community, that it's not just infectious disease providers, but, you know, everybody who sees patients, all the doctors, our OB colleagues, our adult colleagues, our oncologists, everybody's really looking at it from their angles. And a lot of our healthcare societies have also put out guidelines to cater to those different providers and the specific patient population that they see.
How prepared, Dr. Albudo, you're mentioning the interdisciplinary teams coming together to prepare. How prepared is our community and how prepared are our hospitals for what we're going to see in the next week and a half or so?
I believe from the healthcare standpoint that we are well prepared. There is a well-coordinated response between all of our local hospitals that our chief medical officers and, you know, other leaders have been involved in discussions about where to place patients, how to share certain critical equipment if there is a need to do that. And so I think there are multiple layers of collaboration, coordination that have gone into place so far to prepare. And there is a lot of streamlined communication with the governor's office, with our public health authorities as well, to really help us get ready for a surge of patients if or when we get there.
How would you describe the atmosphere and the scene, really, at our hospitals and clinics right now?
I think, you know, people have moved from fear, anxiety, to now more of a calm apprehension of, okay, we have plans, we are prepared, but until we really see those numbers that we have been preparing for, it's hard to say. But I feel like the overall feel is that we are prepared, although we remain anxious because there's just so much about these virus that we still don't know.
Okay, this is great to hear, Dr. Ilbedo. Let me just tell our listeners again, you're listening to our live daily check-in. And we're speaking with infectious disease specialist Dr. Christelle Ilbedo. She's been working on the front lines of preparations on these interdisciplinary teams that you hear us talking about here for preparation of COVID-19 in mid-Missouri. What can we do to slow its spread? How it's playing out in our community health landscape? What questions or comments do you have for Dr. Ilbedo? No question too dumb. As she says, it's a moving target right now. So please let us know what you're thinking. Are you thinking about giving your kids a mask? I've got a question and some questions for Dr. Ilbedo. You can join in with your questions. What are you wanting to do for your family and for yourself to stay safe and to keep safe? What are you just curious about the science behind the coronavirus and our community response? Dr. Ilbedo is on the front lines of all of these questions, and we're going to explore them over the next few minutes here. Dr. Ilbedo, you just mentioned the prepared, calm, but slightly anxious. Those are good words to have. As you look toward the numbers that you're expecting, let me just ask, what numbers are you expecting to see?
So there are several prediction models that are predicting that we'll see a big surge in our numbers in the next couple of weeks. Yes. Again, these are predictions. And so if you look even at the national data level, that the numbers of sick patients and the number of severe cases that have been predicted have gone down. In my personal opinion, I think the biggest factor that's made a difference is people listening and taking recommendations for social isolation. We are heavily relying on the community to follow guidelines, to follow guidance, to stay home, to avoid crowding places, and to be careful about washing their hands and protecting themselves.
Okay, that's great. So your message to people right now, you know, it's funny, our healthcare reporter, Sebastian Martinez Valdivia, said the same thing yesterday when I asked him about predictions and peaks. And he said it all is dependent on people staying home. When you say that, Dr. Ilbedo, would you say that our community has responded fairly well, would you like to see people keep doing what they're doing? Are we doing a good job? Is there more that you'd like to see us doing?
I think we are doing a good job. There's always more we can do. I think sometimes the assumption is, well, if we haven't seen the cases, what's the big deal? And with Easter weekend coming up, again, reminding people to be very cautious, that gatherings and getting together to celebrate as a family or to celebrate with friends and whatnot are the ways that this virus can be easily transmitted. And so we really have to do due diligence to continue what we've been doing so far so that the numbers keep going down. And this comes from inferences back to the 1918 influenza pandemic, that as people started doing less of the social distances, we did see a surge again in the number of cases that we had. And so taking a lesson from history, we have to really be careful and diligent until we really see those numbers go down.
Okay, you're listening to The Check-In, our daily check-in on how we're all doing as a community for community and conversation over the airwaves. We're talking with Dr. Christelle Ilbedo, IMU's infectious disease specialist on the front lines of our crisis response. Dr. Ilbedo, bear with me a second. Let's take we have a couple of callers, a few calls coming in here. Let's take a call from Terry calling from near Versailles, Missouri. Thanks for your call, Terry. Did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Hello, Dr. Ilbedo, and thank you so much for having this conversation. I'm an advanced practice nurse here working with the Mennonites and Amish, and many of them have the symptoms, but were unable to locate or afford tests for here. I guess I called the health department, and they said they only had 2 tests, and they were saving them for them, and I send people to the hospital to get a COVID-19 test, and they do all the other tests, the strep and the N1H1 and everything but the COVID-19 tests. And I wonder, when are we going to change this? There's such a political push to not test. I hear it over and over and over. They don't want us to test. And I'm like, no, we need to test. This is how we predict outcomes.
Thank you, Terry, so much for calling.
Can you help?
Stay on. Thank you for
I'll
this.
I'll listen.
Yeah, thank you for this perspective.
Listen,
feel free to stay on while we get the answer from Dr. Ilbuto.
Okay.
Great question, Dr. Ilbuto. You know, testing, of course, has been a big challenge, having enough tests. So they've had to be rationed nationally, globally. Dr. Ilbuto, your response to Terry's question about how do you get people tested out in rural Missouri?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Terry. And what I can tell you is that places like us, like MU Healthcare, we have our own testing capability that with the drive-through testing that you can send people to. Yes, there is still a very much of what we consider a shortage in testing, and so we have to be careful about who we test. And the reason behind that really is if it changes the way that we manage the patients, then yes, it makes sense to test. And so what we're recommending is, in general, for people who have mild symptoms and who have been exposed, they may not necessarily need a test if they can, you know, stay home, wash their hands, be careful around people, wear a mask when they are in public, that we don't need to test those individuals. But for people who need to come to the hospital, people who are at high risk for complications, they will benefit more from the testing, because then we can help them, we can make sure that they get the health care that they need at the appropriate time. So yes, ideally we should be testing everybody, because we know there are some people who are asymptomatic or have very mild symptoms. But logistically, you know, we do have to be mindful and careful of the resources we have and what a difference it will make based on who we're testing.
Okay. Terry?
I totally...
Go ahead.
Can I speak or not?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. What I'm saying is that, I work with the Amish and Mennonites, and they're in buggies. Nobody's going to take them to the hospital and expose themselves. That's the problem. So I need tests.
Yeah.
Terry, and plus they're affecting their whole family.
Yeah. Terry, those are fantastic questions.
No,
I want to thank you for calling in with those questions. It's great to hear from a frontline provider like yourself. You're raising incredible questions that I think we should explore. And let's get Dr. Ilbuto's answer to your follow-up question. But thank you again, Terry, for calling in. And please call again.
Thank you so much. And I'm here if you need me.
We will do an upcoming program on rural healthcare. We're actually wanting to book that. So please stay in touch with us. That would be great. We'd like to talk to you again. Thank you. And Dr. Ilbuto, yes, did you have any more to say about Terry's further question there?
I think those are great concerns and great questions that have been raised, not just for Missouri, but they've talked about rural America in general and how, you know, lack of testing in rural areas can potentially impact what we see. So I know it's been on the forefront of some discussions, and I would really encourage people to reach out to the governor, reach out to the Missouri Health Department to see, you know, what plans they have in place to address those concerns. I do know that MU Healthcare has a drive-through testing that is free of charge, that they can do a video visit if they have the ability to connect that way. The video visits are free of charge. So if there are really people who are concerned and can make the drive to Columbia, that I would encourage them to consider that as an avenue for testing until they can get clear answer from the state. But she's absolutely right that these are still areas and issues that we haven't quite addressed yet.
Okay, and we'll continue with those discussions on how to get the testing to the people who need them in our rural areas and just generally about the impact of this crisis and the health in our rural communities. We'll keep that conversation going. So thanks again, Terry, for that. Let me go to a call. Alice is calling from Columbia. Hello, Alice.
Hi.
Hi, did you have a question? Yeah, go ahead.
I have two questions, or one question and one comment. One is on masks. Would it be helpful if the city county came out with a stronger recommendations on wearing masks when outside because of asymptomatic people? We got the recommendation from CDC, but it was sort of muted by the federal government. And I have not seen local press saying wear masks when you're outside around other people, like in grocery stores. Secondly, the workers in the grocery stores and places like that, I feel like the city should encourage their employers to offer them masks. Not all stores have made that available. Some have. And my second question, comment, is on ticks. People are outside more, and the symptoms of tick-borne illness, except for coughing, have a lot of similarity to the virus. So people need to be doing their tick checks when they're outside.
Okay, wow, great questions, Alice. Thank you so much for calling in with those questions, Dr. Ilberto. A couple of those are questions that I had as well that I feel like you don't hear so much in the media or on talk shows, but when you're talking with people, however you're doing that these days, Zooming with family, everybody's wondering about masks and everybody's wondering about how safe it really is to go to the grocery store. What are your thoughts on those two first?
So the response depends. So in places where masks are heavily recommended are places that have a high local transmission. So when you take places like New York, that there is a lot of cases there. Therefore, in a setting like that, it makes sense to maybe enforce a little more or to strongly encourage the residents to wear masks when they're out and about. I don't know that in Missouri our cases have hit that threshold yet, and I would rely again on our health department to help us answer that question. But when we do, or if we do, then yes, I think a stronger recommendation for wearing a cloth face covering in public would be advisable. We do have to keep in mind that what the cloth mask does is that if I am infected, for example, and I'm asymptomatic, it is giving me an opportunity to protect the people around me. So it is for those people who have symptoms or who are infected to protect people around them. However, the mask doesn't do any good if I'm not washing my hands, because we know that the virus primarily spread via droplets, which means, you know, cough droplets that we when we talk loudly, we have some small particles that leave our mouths, and when we sneeze, we have small particles that, you know, water droplets that leave our noses, and so that's what carries the virus. And we also have to be very mindful of the surfaces around us, which is why the hand hygiene and the washing hands and not touching face also plays a role. So it's not just the masks alone, it is what else are we doing in conjunction with wearing masks.
Dr. Ilberto, you are a specialist with pediatrics and infectious diseases both. And one question for you is what would you personally recommend when it comes to kids and masks? As I was driving in, I saw some kids in the neighborhood bike riding, being very healthy. They were wearing masks, but they were just kind of standing around and casually adjusting them. So yeah. I just wondered about the realities of that with kids. Any thoughts on that?
So with kids, again, if we social isolate and our kids are playing, you know, we have families playing by themselves. For example, my kids, they play, even though we're outside, we're not playing with our neighbors, they play by themselves. They are just the three of them playing, that you don't need a mask for that setting. You need a mask if you go out of that personal or that family circle where you are potentially in touch with other people, where you don't have control over what their circle, their close circle is. And so for families that have children playing outside, that I don't know that a mask is necessary unless those children are interacting with other children, which, again, I would not recommend necessarily. Mm-hmm. Because as you rightly mentioned, kids are not necessarily good at being diligent about washing their hands or not touching their faces. And we know that there are more children who have asymptomatic disease, meaning that they may have a cold or nothing at all, and they may not even be able to express to you that, oh, mommy, I have a sore throat, or something for us to even have a clue that that's what they have. So that's why, you know, the recommendation for isolation and staying at home is really critical in that setting.
All right. Let me just take a moment to say that we're speaking with MU Healthcare Infectious Disease Specialist, Dr. Christelle Ilberto. She's been working on the front lines of our community response, and also as a scientist can really talk about how this virus is playing out in our communities, how we interpret the knowns and the many unknowns about this disease. You can join the discussion with the changing guidance from the government and health officials, somewhat changing. Are you altering your strategies? Do you have questions for Dr. Ilbudo about how to keep yourself and your family members safe while in public or at home? Or do you have any other questions about how this disease is playing out or likely to play out in our community and in our hospitals and their preparations? Bring us your comments and questions. We've got just a few more minutes of the program here. We can likely work in your call. We had a question, Dr. Ilbudo, also from William calling from Columbia. We didn't get to your call in time, William. Sorry about that. But his question was, how long will the PPE, the personal protective equipment, shortage in the Boone County area last? I guess I should ask, is there a shortage? Do you have what you need when it comes to PPE? Is this likely to be an issue like we're seeing in other parts of the country?
So that's a great question. It is hard to tell. Right now we have what we need, but if we have anything like what's happening to New York, where within a matter of weeks they have, you know, thousands of patients coming for care, then yes, there is a potential that we will run into shortages. So what we currently have implemented is our strategies to help conserve what we have and being really good steward of those PPE resources and only using them appropriately, again, in order to prepare for the potential or the eventuality that we might see that surge that's going to thin out our personal protective equipment. But right now we have what we need to take care of the patients that we currently have.
Okay. Dr. Ilbudo, I need to ask you about something that's been in the news really this morning and this week, dominating the news, at least if you're looking at NPR, which is the issue of disparity and COVID-19 and some incredibly worrying numbers. May or may not be surprising to you. I'd be interested to get your reaction to the numbers that are being reported that African Americans make up one third of hospitalizations nationally for COVID-19, one third. In New York City, it looks like the Latinx population is disproportionately affected. In Chicago, incredible number, and Lori Lightfoot, the mayor, talking this morning on NPR, saying that she's just heartbroken to see 72% of deaths in that city seem to be African-American deaths from COVID-19. What is, without asking what's causing this, because we need to do an entire program on that, but is there anything that we can do to address this in mid-Missouri? And what is your reaction to those statistics that are coming out?
I think that a lot of it has to do with access to care, mm-hmm. and the high risk categories. That we know that certain chronic conditions are more prevalent in those populations. Diabetes, heart disease is more prevalent in the African American community, and so that may have to do with why they seem to present more severely. The other issue is access to care and access to information. That if they don't have, these populations don't have ready access to care, ready access to information, then there, you know, mistrust, misinformation that circulates, and they don't seek care as readily as other groups may be able to do. So I think there's many factors that go into the discrepancy that we've seen, but certainly those are factors that we know have existed in our healthcare system, in our healthcare access for a while.
Okay. And our producer, Christopher Husted, points out that it looks like certain demographics in Boone County, it looks like we're seeing the cases more evenly spread across age groups in Boone County. What do the demographics, as far as who's impacted by this, look like in Boone County so far, and what are they likely to look like?
So we know the disease affects pretty much everybody pretty equally. The differences are how sick they get and how long they're sick and the potential for severe disease. And so even though everybody is at risk for having it, children are less likely to get very sick from it, and older adults and people with chronic conditions are more likely to get very sick from the virus. And so I think those are the differences that we see in terms of age.
Okay. One thing I wanted to, we've got some callers on the line. We will get to these callers. We'll try to work you in here in the next couple of minutes. Alice, our caller, had also talked about the question of ticks. It is true people are getting outside. This is another thing that I think we don't hear as much talked about. We're probably not going to see a media report on this one, but yet it is something I'm thinking about when I go out into our sort of nature trails. What advice would you have for people getting outside about that?
I completely agree with Alice that tick season is upon us. And so the same, we, you know, because of this pandemic, we shouldn't forget what we would routinely do this time of year. So definitely precautionary measures, insect repellents go a long way in helping decrease our exposure. We know that ticks do not carry this particular virus, and so the risk of getting it from a tick is less likely. I do agree that the fever symptom description could be similar to COVID-19. However, most patients with COVID-19 have more of a respiratory onset, whereas, you know, like cold symptoms and troubled breathing, whereas people with tick disease oftentimes have fevers and or rashes with that exposure. So from a healthcare provider perspective, I think we can easily make that differentiation if we start seeing an increase in tick-borne illnesses.
Okay. Dr. Olubido, a science question for you. The writer who I'm a fan of, Siddhartha Mukherjee, wrote in The New Yorker recently about, it was really kind of an educated speculation, you might call it, about viral load. So it's, this is really speculating, but you're the right person perhaps to speculate. Do you think it's possible that the amount of exposure might impact the severity of illness with coronavirus? What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. We know that that's true, that the higher the viral load and the sicker the person, the more virus they are spreading through the coughs and respiratory secretions, the more likely they are to infect other people. Mm-hmm. And so this is why you tend to see a discrepancy in that healthcare workers seem to be, you know, healthy, otherwise healthy frontline providers, healthcare workers seems to get sick from it because we are seeing the sickest patients. And when they present to us and we don't have the right PP or we're not thinking of COVID-19, when we get exposed to them, we tend to get sicker than the general population would. So absolutely, the viral load and the exposure amount does make a difference.
Okay, Dr. Olubido, this has flown by. We need to wrap up soon, but really want to just give you a chance to share any ideas, advice that you would like to leave us with.
I think my biggest advice is, has always been, be prepared, don't panic, and follow the recommendations for social distancing. Even if you don't see, you know, a lot of cases in your neighborhood, that we're still monitoring cases and there is still potential for cases to continue to increase. So everybody still can do their part in helping us get COVID-19 behind us.
Dr. Olubido, thank you for joining us. Thank you for all you're doing. Please come back and join us again anytime.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That's all for today's live community forum, The Check-In. Thanks to Dr. Christelle Olubido for being with us this afternoon. We know she's very, very busy right now, and so we really appreciate her taking the time to check in. Also, let us know how you're doing anytime. Thanks to those of you who called in today. Call in again tomorrow at noon. But if you are not able to join us right during this live half hour, you can call us anytime to let us know where you're at. The number for that is 877-532-0971. You can also get that number at kbia.org. The Daily Check-In is produced by Christopher Husted and me with KBIA News Director Ryan Famuliner, Zia Kelly, Madison Conti, and Hannah France. Thanks to KBIA's on-air team, to Kia Thomas directing today's show, Aaron Hay, Darren Helwig, led by our program director Kyle Felling. They are keeping the lights on here at KBIA. Also, thanks to KBIA Chief Engineer Mark Johnson, who's helping us do that. KBIA's health reporting is by Sebastian Martinez Valdivia and Rebecca Smith. You can see their reporting at kbia.org. Until tomorrow, I'm Janet Saidi. Stay well and stay in touch.